Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another wonderful episode of the Gals of Geekdom podcast here on our final episode of Spooky Month. I am one of your hosts, Crystal Williams, and I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Jazzy.
Hello.
And we have kind of a guest this time. I don't know if you're familiar or not. You know, he's never been on the show. No, you've never been on the show. It's your first time. First time. First appearance on our show.
Okay. I see how it is. You have selective memory, I see. I see how it is.
What's a memory?
I have no idea. I've forgotten already. Perhaps you two can remind me what memory is.
Yes, and we have a special guest, Anthony Grimoglia, again.
Hello again, people. I am Anthony Grimoglia. I'm a writer on various publications. I have somehow found my way to annoy these two ladies multiple times, and for some reason you still ask me to come back on. I have no idea why, and I'm afraid to ask.
You gotta understand, Ant. Shut up. I don't have a point.
This is fair. Actually, like, I feel like
I was gonna have a point, but then my brain just fucking stopped. It was like, So then I just went with, shut up.
I appreciate that. I can respect that. I mean, right now I'm already tending to this beverage I threw together before jumping on this call. So I feel like it's going to be a night without many points at all. So there you go.
I mean, the beverage you're having is just apple juice, right? Is that what it is? Just good
Actually,
old
apple is the one thing that's not in this drink. It's the one fluid that has not been poured into it yet. What is poured into this, however, is a Maker's Mark mixed with a bitters and simple syrup with ice cubes.
Huh.
So not a bad combination. For those of you who are at home interested in mixing yourself a cocktail based on whatever things you found in the back of your liquor closet, now's the time. Unless you're a recovering alcoholic, in which case I commend you for your strength, and you should invest in non-alcoholic beer. It's a good alternative that gives you the taste of what you like without actually allowing you to succumb to your urges.
Or like me, where I had to stop drinking because I went on HRT. So
that too. That's a fair point. And also, you know, if you are undergoing hormone replacement therapy, good for you. It's very important. I'm glad you're taking the steps to validate what, you know, words, English. Phrasing this correctly.
It's all good.
Jazzy's taking the good girl juice.
Yeah, I mean, I also got good news this last week. I am officially confirmed for my top surgery appointment on January 24th of next year. So.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
Congratulations, Jazzy. I saw that on Twitter. That's I'm incredible. So excited for you.
No, congratulations. Yeah. It's incredible. That's really exciting.
So if I'm not on Gals that Friday, it's
oh, that's
I'm
understandable.
It's because I'm in pain and like
excuses.
No, I told my work that yeah, for the week after the surgery, I was probably going to be out of commission because even though my job doesn't require a lot of physical work, I tutor children, and so that causes enough stress when I'm healthy. So.
Oh, I've been there before. I've worked that same position before. It's a lot, especially if they're like of the age of high school or over, or the age of fourth grade or younger. That range is a lot. Middle school, just forget it though. They're the worst. So really, any tutoring is just a lot of stress.
Right.
Doing anything where you use your brain is a lot of stress.
That's why I don't use my brain for anything. I just write without thinking. Awesome. Words just pour out of my nose. Hands, no. I don't even use my hands. It just tumbles.
You know, and speaking of life-changing things that happened, that's going to happen to somebody. So I think something happened to a few, right?
I have no idea what you're referring to.
Didn't you get hitched?
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yes, I did get hitched to a new set of glasses in which I've poured this cocktail into.
Oh, exactly.
No, I have actually just last week, actually, I celebrated my wedding to my lovely spouse, who is currently sleeping in the other room with a migraine, so I'm trying not to be too loud, though I can't help but hear the sounds of tossing and turning a good distance away.
Well, I'm glad that your spouse is trying to nurse that migraine and that you two are happy together, and I'm very happy for both of you.
No, thank you.
Seriously.
Oh no, I'm glad. All joking aside, like, it is a very beautiful process, and it's just amazing. After the show, I'll show you wedding photos. They're quite cute.
Awesome.
It's a lot of that. No, it's cute stuff. But I will say this: one of our first dates following the wedding was because, you know, you have to go on dates with your spouse no matter what, because it just makes you feel just good. It's just a good time. I was like, listen, we have to go to do a typical date we would do. You know, let's go to the movies. Let's go get some food somewhere. And we're like, OK, so what's in theaters? And I got married the same weekend that Dune came out. Now, I'm not sure if you realize this, because you can actually see the bookshelf behind me, Jazzy and Crystal. Mm-hmm. And you can see I have a copy of Dune right there.
Ah.
Yes, it's sitting right in the front of my shelf. Dune is one of my favorite novel series. I grew up with that book. My grandmother, my aunts and uncles, they all had tons of copies of the book. They were obsessed with it, passionate about it. So when I knew there was a new version of Dune coming out, I'm like, this is the movie that I need to see more than any other. So naturally, we saw Halloween Kills instead.
Oh.
I was going to say, I'm planning on seeing Dune like sometime over the weekend, just because, I mean, why not? It's my weekend to relax. Like, I'm not working in the school, so.
No, yeah, I agree. And Dune is such a great movie, but like, it feels weird watching a sci-fi epic in October, because it's spooky month.
Yeah.
And the only sci-fi epics I want to see during spooky month is Alien.
That's true.
Yeah, like, assuming they make a good fucking Alien movie this time.
I mean, what?
Alien show coming up.
You didn't like saying. Prometheus? You didn't like...
No,
movie where they have to run in a straight line from the rolling spaceship in the straight line in the open field where they could just turn right.
My problem with Prometheus is that every character has the average intelligence of your typical horror movie character, but they're supposed to be scientists. Why are they acting like stupid teenagers?
Wait, Jazzy, are you implying that it's not scientifically intelligent to take your helmet off in an alien planet and breathe the pathogen-infected fresh air of a planet that has not been studied yet?
No! It's not intelligent! It's stupid!
But it's totally breathable, Jazzy. That means it's fine. There's nothing wrong
I didn't even bother with Alien Covenant because I knew it was going to be a trash fire, and from what I heard, I was right, so...
I agree with you. I have not seen Alien Covenant either. I've heard some people say they liked it, but like
the only thing that entices me to go watch it is guy on guy action between Michael Fassbender and Michael Fassbender.
I will add one more element too. Billy Crudup is another factor I'd like to see in that movie.
True.
I tend to enjoy him most things he's in. One of those actors who's just like a minor character in every He's a major character, but he's not like a well-known character actor.
Yeah, it's weird. Like most of more recent movies I see him in, I see him as minor characters. But like the two movies I can recall, right, I can name off the top of my head that I've seen him in that where he was the main character, which is where he was a main character at least. Watchmen was one of them. He was Dr. Manhattan. Fucking phenomenal performance. And he was Ashitaka in the English dub of Princess Mononoke, and he was great. He was. Then again, that entire dub was fucking great. So.
What happens if you have Neil Gaiman do your dub, do your translation?
Yeah.
And when you threaten Harvey Weinstein's life, that's another plus.
Yeah, I fucking love that. Like that has Princess Mononoke is such a metal as fuck movie just because of what it is in the context of its own universe, but also just the production.
Everything. Princess Mononoke is, for me, I don't like saying, it's my favorite movie, because like I feel that's a misleading statement, because there's so many movies I would say are my favorites, but they're not always the same quality. Prince Mononoke for me is up there alongside Pan's Labyrinth, the original Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, as one of my all-time favorites. Oh, and of course The Godfather, which is just one of those films that's like, I feel like you have to love if you love film, but like, and if you don't love it, then you get shamed by all the pretentious film. But
this is why I haven't seen it. This is why I haven't seen The Godfather, because it's like, oh God, what happens if I don't like this fucking movie?
I mean, the thing about The Godfather that's so great is it is a slow-paced film, but it's also a tragedy. It's a rise and a fall. Like, but at the same time, I feel a lot of people like it for the wrong reasons. Right. Like, I like it because it tells this story. It's the immigrant story, essentially. It tells a family who comes into a new world, new country, where they're not welcomed, they're not liked, but they find a place in it by subverting the system, but following their own customs, their own internal rules, and they thrive despite the problems. But then, of course, as all things happen, when there's a great rise, there's a great fall, and you see the rise and fall of this family across the span of decades, and it's a heartbreaking tragedy when you look at it from that lens. Mm-hmm. How everything the father creates, the son then destroys by becoming a more extreme version of his dad. But a lot of people like it because it's manly, which is a superficial reason to like something. And they call it manly because it's about men who are just terrible to people, which is a terrible reason to
right,
like
right.
A movie.
I think that's one of those movies where people there is a certain audience that likes it that doesn't understand you aren't supposed to like some of these people.
Yeah, like they're not like they deliberately made the character of Michael Corleone in Godfather Part Two more despicable because like right, Francis Coppola was like, wait, people like him too much. We have to show why this guy's terrible.
Every time I go to a video of a monologue from a Tarantino film and I see someone go, I relate to this, when 9 out of 10 times the character is not meant to be likable here.
Mm-hmm.
You have Mr. Pink's monologue on tipping, and it's like, that's not meant to be fucking gospel, guys. That's meant to show his character.
He's a cheap bastard.
Right, he's an asshole. He's Steve Buscemi.
Ironically, Steve Buscemi in real life is apparently a really chill dude.
Oh no, I have no doubt that he's a very nice guy. It's just in most movies I see Steve Buscemi and he's a prick.
Like, I have a soft spot for Steve Buscemi because of 9/11. Like, he was a volunteer fireman before becoming an actor, and right. When 9/11 happened, he just put on his uniform and just started rescuing people. So that to me was a test with his character. Right. But he always plays asshole.
I'm trying to think of movies where Steve Buscemi didn't play an asshole, and the one that's popping into my head is Spy Kids 2, and I'm wondering how sad Steve's also.
Oh,
I haven't seen Mr. Deeds. So.
Really, any Adam Sandler movie he's in, usually he's
an Adam Sandler movie, yeah.
Right,
he's on the vacation usually with his buds. So how can you be upset by that?
But no, So every time I see a monologue of people like say, oh, I relate to this monologue from this asshole character in a Tarantino movie, or 9 out of 10 characters are fucking assholes.
I would also say, and I wish Lizzie was on because I saw her retweet this on Twitter, and I feel like it's relevant to what she's talking about. She was talking about this point, but I'll tell you guys this right now. There was a post online that went viral thanks to the new Dune film, where this user was basically saying how she had just read about Dune on a wiki or something like that, and was saying, oh, how could it be so – it's all pro-war and pro-fascism and pro, you know, these horrible things and pro, showing how white male saviors are the best. And I'm reading this tweet, and I'm like, you missed the point of the entire story, because Dune is about showing how – the messiah obsession society has is incredibly toxic, how religious feverism is dangerous, how any cause, no matter how good, will eventually become corrupted if it becomes extreme enough. And it ends with the quote-unquote white male savior alone in a desert with his eyes gouged out, miserable and, like, isolated. spoilers for Children of Dune, by the way, but it's a great tragedy. But people who only see, you know, actually, I think Frank Herbert got like a lot of flack for that when he published Dune Messiah and Children of Dune, because the story he was writing went south as the story he was writing predicted it would. And people didn't like that. It's like the Empire Strikes Back, Last Jedi kind of problem, where all the signs lead south, but the fans aren't listening to that. They just think, oh, cool, fights. And they miss the obvious hint the story is not what they think it's going to be.
Right. I think it's this idea that this, like, we have these expectations for a story, that how they need to go. And if a movie dares try to subvert it, if any story tries to go beyond that, then suddenly it's bad, which I don't believe. I'm always of the opinion of whatever the movie presents, I'll judge it for that. Like,
agreed. It's the story it's trying to tell. So you have to kind of interpret it,
right,
as
like,
that's the narrative it's trying to tell.
Right. And yeah, even movies I don't like, I generally criticize the narrative and how, not necessarily why I didn't like this narrative, but why the narrative attempted didn't work. Like, it's funny. I have so many. Whenever a Snyder fan, for example, argues with me, they think I don't understand the intent of something like Batman v Superman. I do, and I respect the intent in some regards because there's good ideas I can see. Kind of. The problem is they're badly executed. And I like to think I'm not that unfair to Snyder. I didn't hate his Justice League movie.
I think it's interesting. Like, I think the Snyder cut for Justice League is a fine movie. Right. I just don't want to ever see it a second time. You know?
I watched it. I own a copy just for the collection.
It's good. It's a good movie.
It's a nice collection. It's kind of funny having a movie that takes up 2 Blu-rays now, because I haven't had that since the Lord of the Rings extended cut. So,
mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But let me tell you, this is no Lord of the Rings. God damn.
God no. No, there's no comparison.
No. The thing about Justice League is that it's a good movie. I enjoy, like, Snyder's cut of Justice League, I think, is good. I like parts of it, but then Superman appears, and then I'm suddenly having a miserable time because I really hate this version of Superman.
You see, that's not even my problem with it. Crystal, you've seen Zack Snyder's Justice League by this point, right? Do you have any
I've seen the film that we are supposed to call magnum opus, the masterpiece, or else we'll be killed, right?
Yes. We all love the film.
Yes, we do. Please do not hurt me.
It's like you can see like the red dot from the sniper around on your forehead.
No, I swear, unless you give these films like anything like lower than just praise from the high mountains upon the sunrise,
the Messiah has come.
I got shit because I felt indifferent towards Man of Steel. I didn't love it. I didn't hate it either. I was completely like, that was a movie that I watched and had no impact on me one way or the other.
Man of Steel is interesting for me. So I'll just say what my feelings on the Snyder, I guess, trilogy, quote unquote, are, so you have a continuity of it.
Okay.
When I first saw Man of Steel, I was not a fan, but then it grew on me. But then after a while, I also soured on it a little bit. It's not bad. I think it's a solid superhero film. But there are things I don't like about it, and they all have to do with Jonathan Kent.
Yeah, Jonathan Kent fucking sucks.
Like that, the way they do that character, I just not a fan.
I don't know.
Not a fan.
I also just don't like this version of Superman. Like, I
it's
can't.
It's the moral center that they're presenting, right?
I have no issue with Henry Cavill as Superman.
Right. No, Henry Cavill. I'm not saying anything against the actor. Let me clarify that right now. Henry Cavill, for the material he's given, does a good job. I have issues with how this character is written, especially when I consider, if we're considering Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, and Justice League, the Zack Snyder version, a trilogy. First of all, it's the most tonally and artistically inconsistent fucking trilogy I've seen in my life. Good God.
I also don't like how they take Superman. Man of Steel sets up something really interesting. The idea that humanity will judge him for being different. Mm-hmm. And any marginalized person can relate to that narrative to some extent, where you can do everything right and still be hated because who you are is not what normal society wants you to be. That's an interesting setup. And it ties very well into the idea that the creators of Superman were Jewish men growing up during World War, they're living during World War II, and projecting their fantasies onto a character who are, and they were ultimately kind of screwed out of the legacy of the character they created, at least fiscally. That's an interesting setup. That's always relevant and always contemporary. The problem is that Snyder doesn't really understand what that means. He doesn't see the very real connotations of his story, and instead goes for this grandiose narrative that's not relatable. He created a totally relatable story and then neglected the merits of it to focus on this kind of Greek tragedy that he doesn't really... Even the Greeks couldn't write Greek tragedies. Let's be quite honest. Have you read anything other than the Oedipus cycle for the Greeks in the old plays? Most of them are not that good. Or at the very least, they're very unusual and hard to read. Like the Euripides cycle, is that what it's called? The three plays with Electra and all that. Right. It ends on a... It has some cool ideas, but... Cycle of Revenge ends with a court case that's not particularly compelling because it ends with arguing that women have no involvement in the pregnancy cycle. Therefore, killing your mom's okay.
But to get back on Superman for...
Yeah, okay, I got sidetracked there. My lovely regained
let me just say
a second.
My problem with Superman throughout what we could call this Snyder trilogy is that he starts the story the same way he ends it. Like, throughout these three films, Superman has little, if any, development. He's not interesting. And the implications of Justice League with how this character would, quote-unquote, fall from grace, to not mince words for a second, it disgusts me.
You see, I don't mind the idea of the fall of grace because they've done it well before with the Injustice comics.
Right.
Well, being a your mileage may vary. My issue isn't that he falls because Lois Lane, you know, is killed. That's heartbreaking. It's a fridging of a character, but I get it. Mm-hmm. My issue is that apparently Snyder wanted to have Lois Lane have an affair with Batman in the sequel that he was going to make, and that they were going to have like a bat child with Lois Lane, which is
one of the strangest
ideas I've ever heard for a Batman story.
This is why I am looking at this idea of quote unquote restoring the Snyderverse, and I'm like, I'm sorry, you want to see these dumb ideas and put made into fruition? But my issue is it only takes Lois Lane's death for Superman to just throw away all his fucking morals and join goddamn Darkseid. At least with something like Injustice, he was kind of making his own faction. It was like kind of an inverse, a corruption of his ideals. Like,
mm-hmm. And the idea that even good intentions can lead to bad results. And this, it's more like tragedy therefore becomes evil, which is just a weird. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so actually on this note, I do want to transition, if I may, into discussing a very different movie.
That's a very interesting word when dealing with us.
Oh, I chose my word in that case very deliberately, given you two ladies' experiences. Into Halloween, actually.
Oh, the spooky times.
The movie where I saw the first one and liked it so much that I have not touched the sequels.
Well, that's what I want to talk about, because authorial intent for the sequels is very interesting. John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, very famously with Halloween, said, "Yeah, we don't want a what sequel? No. Why? And I actually like a lot of the Halloween sequels. Well, a number of them. and I'm very interested in Halloween lore as a fan, but like, unlike certain horror films work well with sequels, right? Like certain horror franchises, they're designed for sequels.
Yeah, for
Jason,
sure.
Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, they work with sequels. There's a quality to them that really applies well to sequels, where you can say, oh, hey, Jason, he's never this ever-evolving presence. Freddy, he's a person with personality. He's getting revenge. Oh, he's out people to kill who he's getting revenge on. What's he going to do now? Oh, I see. You know, there's an element of intrigue there. But other franchises have had trouble with sequels. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is a good example of this, where none of the sequels really follow up on the merits of the original. Because how really could they? You know, how could you really make a sequel to Texas Chainsaw Massacre? It just doesn't make sense. You know, it doesn't lend itself well to being a franchise when your first film is this encapsulation of madness. Halloween feels like it should be really easy to make sequels to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow, every time they succeed, they fail.
It seems like they want to make the weirdest choices possible for the sequels.
Yeah, which is why I've kind of dug the new series I'll go back a second with this. So for those who are not aware, and I'm sure Crystal and Jazzy know this to an extent, the Halloween franchise is a very fractured timeline. If you drew it, I've seen charts explaining the Halloween timeline, and it's just like, you shouldn't have to be this confused watching movies in order. So there are actually three Halloween timelines, not counting remakes or Halloween 3, which Halloween 3 is its own thing. It's separate from everything
else. It literally should just be called Season of the Witch.
It's honestly a really good movie, too. I like Halloween 3 quite a lot. It's that's a fun one. So it goes Halloween 1, Halloween 2, Halloween 4, Halloween 5, and the sixth, culminating in the sixth film, The Curse of Michael Myers, where they have Paul Rudd just being just weird. And Halloween 6 has two versions, the theatrical cut and the producer's cut, which is its whole thing. Because Curse of Michael Myers was such a strange-ass film with cults and magic, and one of the lead stars, Donald Pleasance, passed away shortly after they finished filming it, they decided to reboot the franchise with the next film, which is not called Halloween 7, but rather called H2O. Halloween H2O. So the second timeline goes Halloween 1, Halloween 2, Halloween 7, H2O, and then Halloween 8, Halloween Resurrection. But Resurrection was so terrible that they gave Rob Zombie the franchise, and he just decided to go a flat-out reboot. So that's the reboot timeline. Got the ninth and tenth films as Halloween and Halloween 2, confusingly enough. And then years later, they try to make a bunch of sequels. There's actually a bunch of really interesting ideas for sequels that fell through the cracks for one reason or another, leading up to the 11th Halloween film, bafflingly named Halloween. And Halloween ignores all the other Halloween films except for the first Halloween, also titled Halloween. It's the new timeline that they are currently airing films in goes Halloween, Halloween, Halloween Kills, and then next year it's going to be Halloween Ends. I am sure that Halloween Ends will be as successful at ending the franchise as Friday the 13th, the final chapter. The Jason Goes to Hell, the final Friday. Freddy's Dead, the final nightmare. And so on and so forth down the list.
Which is interesting they're having this conversation. I think it was last episode, Jazzy, that I, or maybe it was the one before. All these weeks are bleeding into each other for me, but I had a conversation about why I think Halloween 2018 is a weird film.
Oh?
I enjoy the movie. I enjoyed it more this third time I saw it recently.
Yeah, I like that one more every time I see it, honestly.
But there's just, it's, I've been thinking on it a lot, and it's so strange. Like, sequences are so weird in that film. Like, character interactions are strange. The structure is weird. I don't know, it's just a strange film. Like, it doesn't feel like anything else I've seen in terms of horror, and that's because of David Gordon Green's direction and co-written by Danny McBride. I'm just like, okay, I see there's a comedy in here, right? But there's also really strong visuals of horror. Like,
oh yeah.
I will say the strongest aspect of both films that I've seen, Halloween and Halloween Kills, they're both visually striking at moments. They've got incredible cinematography. And, of course, the score was, I think, are incredible by John Carpenter coming back and having done the score.
What I love about the score is that it's John Carpenter and his son. So it's like these two, like a family affair at this point.
Which, like, is amazing in and of itself. But the, like, idea of
just John Carpenter just getting high with his son and making music is just so so strangely endearing to me that I'm like, I can't hate that.
I've been endeared to John Carpenter, like, his personal life ever since I heard that he spent like so many hours playing Xbox.
Just getting pissed at, like, kids playing Xbox. I love that. Can you imagine, like, just playing, like, fucking, like, Halo and then hearing, like, the guy just being John Carpenter telling you to go fuck yourself? It's so great. How can you remember that?
He's impossible to hate for me, personally.
It's just great. He retired from film because, like, nah, I'd rather just... I can't imitate John Carpenter's voice. He has, like, a certain cadence.
Yeah, he does.
And it's like, nah, I'd rather just get high and play Xbox all day. My son just be Sonic the Hedgehog. I really want to go fast instead of make films. Like, I love that.
It's so adorable.
It's great.
I think I want to get into the weirdness where I think it's strange.
Definitely. I have some comments on Halloween Kills, especially, that I have a lot of... So I just saw that, like, less than a week ago, and I have a lot of feelings on it that I haven't really sorted through yet.
Is this going to be spoilery feelings?
I'll avoid spoilery feelings, but I may... If I get into spoilers, I'll give a warning to anyone who hasn't seen Halloween Kills yet, because as of now, it's only been out 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You probably have seen it already if you want to see Halloween Kills. It is available on Peacock right now, as well as in theaters. I saw it in theaters, but I get, you know, New Jersey, it's a little easier. It's less, COVID is less severe. I've had my booster shot already. So it's nice. It's a good call. So I get, like, some people may not feel comfortable yet.
You hear that, listeners? You better fucking get vaccinated.
Yeah, get vaccinated. Seriously. They're not going to put, like, nanobots under your skin. I've heard some weird things about what people think happens.
That already tracks you.
Yeah, really. Why would they want to put nanobots in you when the device you're hearing about nanobots on does it already? Like, it's like, why would they go the extra measure? You've already done it. Like, you're already being tracked. You paid for it. You bought it yourself. You're paying bills on it. Exactly. Hell, you might be listening to my voice on it.
I'm assuming our listeners are all vaccinated. I'm assuming, considering the spaces we run in. Exactly. But no, I think. So go ahead. Sorry.
No. You go first.
I was going to say. Oh, yeah, I wanted to get into, let's get into the conversation, because I wanted to talk about, again, why Halloween is so weird, because I think it's hard to explain, but the dialogue choices, the humor, it feels so disjointed in Halloween 2018. Like, I feel like that film, like, has moments where it's like, I can, like, pinpoint that and go, like, oh, yeah, this is the same director who did Your Highness.
Oh, yeah, Pineapple Express.
And Pineapple Express, like, oh wait, this is really strange. But then it has moments where it's like, oh, this scene works, and then it has another scene right after that where it doesn't work, and it's just like, it's this weird mix match of different tones competing for the best sequence in the film. And it's just like, it's even, I don't even think it's that scary, to be honest. Like,
I don't think any of the Halloweens except for the first one are particularly scary. I think the first Halloween is very unsettling. I was going to say,
the first one was scary. I thought, yeah. When you said none of the Halloweens, I was like, wait a minute. And then you said, except the first one, go on.
Yeah, the first one's genuinely scary. I think the scariest sequence in that is that final like montage where they, I mean, spoilers for a 40-year-old movie, but when they shoot Michael Myers out of the window, and I actually just finished rewatching it just before this call. I was with family and we said, oh, let's watch Halloween. It's almost Halloween time. And the scene where Michael Myers, they shoot him out of the window. It was the boogeyman. And God, as a matter of fact, it was. Goes out the window, looks down. Michael Myers totally gone. That scene is terrifying because not because of what you see, because of the montage where they show all these old locations at the film.
Oh, I love Michael Myers.
It's so unsettling, and that's what High Halloween works, and the other Halloweens, including Halloween, don't work, confusingly enough. The subtlety.
The subtlety, and it's this series does not have subtlety anymore.
No, Halloween Kills has killed any subtlety in this franchise. Oh, that's not true.
I mean, Halloween Resurrection did that. I mean, yeah, that's true.
Actually, really, all of them have killed subtlety. Like Halloween 2, you have
the original Halloween 2.
Original Halloween 2, not to be confused with Halloween 2, the movie with the white horse. You have that one scene in Halloween 2 where Michael Myers kills a woman by burning her skin off in a hot tub.
Yes.
Like, it's one of the most gruesome kills in the movie, and it's so memorable because it's so violent, but. It's also like in the first film, the most gruesome kill is when he pins like the boyfriend to like the wall and just stares at it. And it's like that sense of, oh, this guy's like, up until that point, you think, oh, he's just some stalker. He's a creep. He's a monster. But that's the scene when you realize, wait, this guy's not, there's something he's missing something there. Else.
Yeah,
it's something that's not there. It's like more than just a lack of humanity. There's like a lack of like human qualities. Like you realize he's like this alien thing. That is some of the most terrifying implications in any film. Whereas with Halloween 2, it's like, no, he just wants to kill people. Like, he really is just an asshole.
Yeah, it's a Halloween 2 is a slasher film of its time. Do you know what I mean? Like, Halloween invented the slasher genre, essentially, or I would say not necessarily invent, but I at least made it so that the following slasher boom could happen. You know, found a way of crafting it in such a way, right? But because it's done so well, Halloween 2 comes around, it feels like the slasher films that were starting to come out in the early 80s.
And don't get me wrong, I like Halloween 2 quite a bit, but it's not as good as the first. I actually think Halloween 2018 really draws heavily from one specific scene in Halloween 2. And it's a scene early on when Michael Myers just wanders into this family's house and then just kills them.
Oh, that's right.
These characters have no relevance to the plot. They're not really important before or after. He just walks right in, kills them, and then leaves. And Halloween 2018, and to a lesser extent, Halloween Kills, I think love this scene because they do it better.
You think the scene in 2018 is better than?
Yeah.
I think so too, actually.
It's very unsettling.
That scene does work.
There's one of the best scenes in that movie.
I think the best shot in the entire movie is the shot where you're following him. He goes and looks through the window of the house, right? And then he goes around the back of the house, but the camera stays on the window. Actually, I love that when they showed that window, it's a reflection of Michael in it that you see too. But then he goes around the side of the house, and the camera just stays looking through that window. And then you see the woman walk up to it and get stabbed to the neck. But I feel like that scene is really well done and effective, and I like that it's like a kind of like one continuous shot. I think that's one of the best visual sequences in that entire film. Like, that's why I say this film is so weird to me, because it's got those like moments of genuine like craft, you know, like genuine like create filmmaking ingenuity and craft. But then it has a scene where two cops are in a car talking about specifically which sandwich that he bought.
Are you implying that
I implying that scene's bad.
I love that scene. It's so stupid. It's perfection.
Because I kind of hate it.
It's so idiotic. I love it. But, like, don't you love the scene with, like, the kid? It's like he's with his dad, who he's like this macho man, and he's like, I want to go to ballet practice. Or, like, I want to go to dance practice. And it ends in him.
Yeah.
It's such a
great... I don't mind that.
It's such a good scene.
I don't mind
scene.
That reversal.
Oh, it's great, because it gives you all this characterization very quickly, and then they kill him.
See, I'm weirdly multifaceted when it comes to characterization in these films, because I think both of them do this weird thing where they try and give characters certain qualities that stand out to humanize them, but I often feel like sometimes those qualities are strange.
I agree, and I feel like that is one of the things. So before I say anything, Jazzy, I know you have avoided any of the Halloween sequels, but Crystal, have you seen Halloween Kills yet?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not opening weekend. So.
Oh, hell yeah. So I think you're going to know how I feel when I say this. Middle chapter syndrome.
It definitely has that. So
right?
I have an interesting take on Halloween Kills. It's gotten considerably worse reviews than the first film, and I won't argue that I think the film maybe as a whole isn't necessarily as good, but there are things I actually think there are some things I actually found to be improvements in some ways.
No, I totally
feel
agree.
Like tonally it's way more consistent. I feel like it doesn't try and be five things at once. It is just focusing on what it wants to focus on. And it does have those little weird moments I see in Halloween 2018, but it's not as pronounced for me. Do you understand what I mean by that?
Oh, yeah, no, totally. And I think Halloween Kills, my big issue with Halloween Kills is it doesn't have a beginning and it doesn't have an ending. It just kind of stops without any feeling of, like, climax. But it also has one of the most horrific sequences in the entire series in it.
Which sequence are you specifically referring to? Is it the hospital sequence?
Yeah.
And
It's great, actually.
Yeah. I think.
It's one of the most horrific things I've ever seen in a Halloween film. And it's the craziest part of all of it is that Michael Myers has nothing to do with it.
Cool. Jazzy, are you curious about hearing? I think maybe we should talk spoilers for this scene because I think it's fascinating.
Go right ahead.
Like I said, I don't have any interest in seeing it. So
okay.
So before we go into explain the scene itself, there has to be some preamble for those who are less familiar. The whole concept of Halloween Kills is that it takes place right after the last Halloween film, so Michael Myers escaped from the fire that Laurie Strode set for him, and he's just wandering around causing mayhem. And a bunch of the survivors from previous films, including Tommy Doyle, Lindsay Wallace.
There's a kid from the first film that if you remember, they bring the children that Laurie was taking care of back.
Along with the nurse, Dr. Loomis brought along with them to, like,
yeah, there's some nurse, yeah.
They brought, like, the schoolyard bully back, you know. They bring the sheriff, whose daughter was one of Laurie Strode's friends, back. And they bring all these characters back who are, like, you know, were relatively minor characters in the first film, but
which
now
I
they're
like... I like seeing that again.
Oh, I loved it. It's nice. It's fan service, but it's fan service that makes sense. Like, these
it's
people
the same
would
town,
still...
Right? It's the
same town. They would remember the trauma of what happened to them years ago. And especially if you were personally affected... Yeah, you're going to be pissed. And if more people are being killed right now by a creature that's unstoppable and the authorities just kind of let him go.
I noticed in both films the authorities suck.
Yeah, like they have the cool sheriff guy who has like the crazy looking hat. But every time he does something, it's like, yep, Michael Myers is out. We're not going to do anything about it, though. But he's out there. And like... It's a system that has completely failed on all levels. So you get that the people are paranoid. But they mention this briefly in the last film and more obviously in this one, that there were multiple patients that escaped from the hospital when Michael Myers broke free. And one of them is just wandering around town. Now, what you have to remember is that Michael Myers wears a mask all the time. So most of the people there have not seen his face. So earlier in the film, someone breaks into one of the characters' cars, and Tommy Doyle, who's played by Anthony Michael Hall in this one, just kind of goes nuts and like tries attacking the car this guy's in. And you can tell he's like thinking, like, I gotta get this fucking Michael Myers, man. Gotta kill Michael Myers. You know, he's going nuts. And they end up going to a hospital where it turns out the guy who broke into a car was just a mental patient who was like desperate and scared and wanted help. And the entire town converges on him, thinking he's Michael Myers. And the only person who seems to have any shred of empathy towards this guy is Laurie Strode's daughter, who was introduced in the previous film. And she kind of tries.
Laurie does too. Laurie does too. Yeah.
True, but she's like incapacitated, so it doesn't count. Laurie Strode, that's one issue I have with the movie too. Jamie Lee Curtis is just kind of like in a hospital bed the whole movie because she has like her guts falling out because Michael Myers stabbed her so much. So she's like has no real influence on any of the events in the film, which makes sense, but also it's annoying because Jamie Lee Curtis is just her. It's Jamie Lee Curtis. So, you know, the crowd kind of just starts trying to kill this guy, and they're not listening to anyone saying it's not the guy. And so, in an act of desperation, the guy breaks open a window and flings himself out rather than let the crowd get to him. And it's done in this like heartbreakingly disturbing sequence that's like really captures the intensity of mob violence, especially when the mob is beyond control. And I saw reviews of the film afterwards where they're like, the movie doesn't really take a side on if mob violence is good or not. And I'm like, but
it does. So clearly.
It's not subtle. It really isn't subtle. Like, even like, at no point does the mob accomplish anything at all.
No, like, nothing they do matters.
Even in, like, the quote-unquote climactic scene where it looks like they're doing something that means something, nope, it's all for nothing. It's a movie that really illustrates how futile mob violence is and how it's mainly based off of fear, you know, fear, paranoia, and not logic. And it's a really – I like that element of the film. Like that crux is really powerful and strong.
Yeah, it's – like I said, I think that is actually one of those things that I would consider, like, an improvement.
Oh, yeah.
In ways.
And the scene where the guy dies, it's deeply disturbing because, like, you see this mental patient – terrified, fling himself out, and then he smashes his head against the ground. It's like it just splatters, and it's gross.
Yeah, you see everything. Yeah, it's very gory.
Oh yeah.
The
film is very, very gory. I might want to add.
Yeah, it definitely ups it on the gruesomeness, and the gruesomeness in the ways in which Michael kills people too.
Yeah, like he looked pissed in this film. Like other films, he looks kind of soulless and detached. This film, he was
on a rampage.
He was pissed off, and like everything seems to indicate, like, kind of like an adjacent, like a Kane Hodder, Jason Voorhees kind of pissed off. Like it's unlike Michael Myers, but it's also like you get the vibe that what happened in the previous film really ticked him off.
Do you though? I feel like it's just like maybe he's, I don't know if he's pissed. It seems like he just more like is, the more he kills, the more blood hungry he becomes, you know?
That's possible, but there's a sense, it feels like he's pissed off because, like, and I think this is one of those things where, like, the character is so alien that assigning motive or human emotion to him is kind of a futile effort. But, like, the scene especially where he, like, spoiler alert, kills the boyfriend that everyone wanted to get killed in the last film. Like, he doesn't just, like, kill him. He, like, just savagely just tortures him right in front of, you know, the person that, who, you know, his girlfriend.
Yeah, it's just, none of these kills are just kills. They're like torture.
Also, I might want to add one thing also. So how do you feel about the gay couple?
Like every other couple in the movie, they are definitely strange.
So red flag number one, you move into the murder house.
Jazzy, did you hear this part? That there's a gay couple that lives in Michael's house. No.
Why would you? My only question is, why would you move into the house of a fucking murderer?
And like, I don't know if I hate these characters or love them at the same time.
I don't hate them. I just think they're weird, like every other character.
Like they're such idiots. But they're like, they share like the same brain cell idiot. So I'm like, I'm okay with that. Their names are Big John.
Oh, Big John and Little John.
And you know this because every time they're away, like they do like a Marco Polo thing where it's like, hey, Big John. Hey, Little John. It's like, what are you doing? Like, what? And then they're like, oh, someone's breaking into our house. They take, like, the cheese knives.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that's going to do a lot. Yeah, you're good with that.
I think it's Big John that gets the worst, maybe one of the more gruesome deaths, too, in that film.
It's when his eyes get, like,
popped out.
Yeah, oof, that's brutal. I think, I don't know who had the worst death in that film. That was up there. But the woman, the older black woman who gets the fluorescent light stabbed through her throat and like slowly gurgles out her last breath. That's pretty. That was pretty brutal.
While she also watches as Michael takes her husband's body and stabs every kitchen knife into his body.
Like he just goes to the drawers. One goes down. It's like every knife, one after the next. I do like how they had Dr. Loomis show up.
Which I think from what I saw of behind the scenes stuff is they used the mask.
Yeah, like they just found an actor who looked kind of like Dr. Loomis and just, you know, made him. I would like to see if they do more with that, but I also
like. It actually looked good. Like yeah, I would say that looked better than doing the CGI stuff.
It looked better than like especially after like Star Wars and seeing like young Luke Skywalker. Like, this was made on, like, far less money.
The people I went with literally thought that this was footage from the old films.
Yeah. That was the strangest thing. Like, I'm looking at this and I'm like, this is, like, some of the best, like, de-aging stuff I've seen. But then you realize it's not really de-aging. It's just recasting, which is brilliant and effective and amazing. Like, I think that's – I would love to see more of that, honestly. It was just superb.
Yeah, the film starts out with a actual flashback to the night right after Michael disappears in the original film.
Yeah, and it shows how they end up capturing him.
Instead of going through Halloween 2.
Yeah, and I think that sequence is better than Halloween 2.
I think so. I do find it weird, though, that Michael would just let himself be captured.
But at the same time, it's such a Michael thing to do.
Is it? I guess on the original. Yeah, I guess when he's a kid. Yeah.
It's just no explanation. It's like, why would he do that? Well, because. And that's like just perfect. Like, why wouldn't he fight it? Well, he just didn't. So that's your answer. Because Michael Myers doesn't make sense. He's like this weird alien thing.
Like, I also like the attention to detail, which also makes sense because I didn't think about it in my mind. But like how like they show modern Michael, his mask is all like burned and dirty and his clothes are pretty much the same, but then when you see it was really striking for me because I saw Halloween 2018 before I saw Halloween Kills, and I went to Halloween Kills, and then you see Michael in his outfit, but it's just as pristine as it was in Halloween the original. Mm-hmm. Like seeing it whiter and seeing the clothes not nearly as dirty was like almost like weird to me. For like that sequence when they showed him again, I'm like, oh, wait, this makes perfect sense.
I kind of want to know what they're going to do in Halloween Ends, because, like, again, it ends on a note that makes me think it's the middle chapter. This is not a conclusion. And this thing of the idea that, like, the more he kills, the more vicious he becomes, which I like. I think it's a cool concept. It definitely fits, you know, but I'm just wondering, what are they going to do to top all this next?
I mean, they've already set up a movie where there's a high body count. Are they going to do that again?
Like, who's left? Like, what characters left? Like, there's four living characters. Like, in this, like, they got rid of everyone else.
There was one death, though, in the movie that made me laugh out loud. And I think it's been passed around. Yeah.
It was the gun
character. Jazzy, did you see this pass around Twitter?
No. Okay. I was aware there was a kill going around Twitter, but I didn't watch it.
Okay. Well, basically, this woman, she decides to go up to shoot Michael. And Michael is, like, in the car. And so he kicks the car door. It hits her in the hand, and she shoots herself in the head.
Ah! Okay.
It's perfect.
Congratulations, Crystal. You gave me the one reason why I should watch the 2018 film and then go see this one. I need to witness this. This is beautiful. All anyone had to fucking tell me.
It's great. It is a genuinely great kill. And it's like really funny. And it's in like a sequence of like, also before that, there's the stethoscope attempt on Michael Myers' life.
That's a great moment too, actually.
Her husband tries to like fight Michael Myers by strangling him with a stethoscope. It's like this moment where he's struggling and Michael Myers almost like stops fighting and just like considers the situation.
Like, what are you doing?
like, really?
Michael's like, really?
Like, this is your plan. Okay. It's kind of amazing.
Well, I finally got my, the thing that needed to convince me to watch a sequel to Halloween.
That being said, though, if anything convinces you to watch a sequel to Halloween, it should be one of the greatest Halloween kills in any movie. And that's Halloween 4. Which has one of the greatest kills I've ever seen in a film. Michael Myers, he's sitting on a rocking chair. Girl comes up behind him. He gets up. And the person he was on the rocking chair before was waiting for Michael Myers to hit like a shotgun. Michael Myers now has that shotgun. And you think at first, he's going to shoot this woman with a shotgun. But nope. He takes the shotgun in both hands and stabs her with it. Through the torso, through a wall,
yeah, and just
into the wall with a shotgun.
Man, I saw it in Helsing Ultimate. You're going to have to do better than that.
True, but this is live action.
Still, doesn't change the fact I saw it in Helsing Ultimate.
Yeah, but Helsing Ultimate's different because
Michael Myers.
Yeah, because they know it's cool. And Michael Myers doesn't even know how to use a gun. He's just going to use it as a knife.
Because that's
still though. If you're going to try and convince me to watch any of the sequels that aren't the 2018 film and beyond, you're going to have to do better than that.
What if I told you one of them has Paul Rudd in it?
I'm aware. Paul Rudd's not one of my favorite actors ever. I don't hate the guy. I like him fine. But it's not one of those things where I need to obsessively see every Paul Rudd movie.
What if I told you that one of them has Busta Rhymes kung fu fighting Michael Myers?
This is intriguing.
And then in another scene in that same movie, Busta Rhymes, dressed as Michael Myers, just yells at Michael Myers and he just kind of leaves.
Okay, I'm interested.
But I also told you that Tyra Banks was in this movie also.
Okay.
And what I also told you, it's the worst film in the series.
I've heard Resurrection is the worst film in the series.
It genuinely is
bad. I don't know. I've heard pretty shit things about Halloween 6 as well, especially if you're going by the theatrical cut.
Yeah, but Halloween 6, though, has something different about Halloween 6. Halloween 6 is so bizarre that it's kind of endearing.
I watched a movie that was bizarre but endearing.
Yeah, like, it's so out there.
I think I need to bring this up.
Oh.
slightly changing off topic from
the
Halloween franchise, which is perfect for this season. But I want to bring up that last weekend I spent most of it watching the Slumber Party Massacre films.
Oh my God, yes.
I've not seen 3, but I have to skip 3 because I wanted to see the remake instead. Or reboot, remake-ish thing that they did. Jazzy, are you familiar with the Slumber Party Massacre films?
I've heard of them, never seen them.
Okay. What if I told you it's a slasher movie with a guy who uses a drill?
A drill.
On a guitar.
That's in 2.
I'm sorry. A drill and then a drill on a guitar.
So the first film is a big drill, right? And obviously, it's your typical, like, by-the-numbers slasher film, pretty much.
So, it's a slasher version of Gurren Lagann?
Yes, but with slightly more phallic imagery.
Yeah, there's definitely...
More phallic imagery than Gurren Lagann?
Well, concentrated.
It is... The original is... Like, if I want to give somebody, like, a film that is slasher, like, of that era... That's just quintessential. Slumber Party Massacre 1 is that film. It
definitely feels like, yeah, I agree. it feels that way because they're making fun of it.
No, but... actually, I mean, I know that. So the actual story is that the original script was written by a woman who wanted to make a feminist takedown of the slasher genre to make fun of the sexist tropes. Unfortunately, it fell into the hands of one Roger Corman, who, decided to go, nah, we're not going to do that. We're going to make this a straight-up slasher movie. And the original writer was pretty much screwed over in that whole mess.
I just saw a reoccurring thing for Roger Corman. You ever see Humanoids of the Deep?
I've not.
Well, it was like a Creature from the Black Lagoon kind of knockoff, where Roger Corman decided after the female director finished making it, I forget her name, that he was going to film extra, he needed more TNA, so he just filmed like 5 or 6 extra rape scenes where fishmen attack women, and that was his addition to the film. And the director very reasonably said, what the actual fuck?
So another female director got screwed around because that's surprisingly Summer Party Massacre is directed by a woman, but not the same woman who wrote it. But
bizarrely enough, the same producer. It keeps happening. Roger Corman worked with a lot of women, actually. I've noticed, like, he did, to his credit, he did give a lot of women opportunities to start. The problem is he also screwed them over invariably. If they didn't comply to his specific tastes, yeah, which is usually put more sex scenes into the movie.
Like, there's an extended sequence in Slumber Party Massacre where it's just a shower sequence where they have a conversation. It goes absolutely nowhere, and it's literally just a shot of all of them naked in the shower, and then the camera pans down to the woman's ass, and then it pulls back up to her back. And it's just like, why? Oh, Roger Corman, duh.
Yeah, like Corman, the thing is, I respect Corman in this sense. He got a lot of films made for very little money, and he got a lot of careers started. But he was also a very sleazy producer and a very sleazy, sleazy director, whose films are consistently very, very sleazy. That being said, he's very talented at what he does, but, like, so sleazy. Like, you've seen Galaxy of Terror, right? Anyone?
No, I've not, actually. I've not seen it. I've honestly, like the Corman films are kind of, like, my blind spot. But
that's fair.
Like, yeah.
Do you know about the scene from Galaxy of Terror that's very infamous?
Is it, that one about a giant slug creature or something? I don't know.
The giant maggot alien, yeah.
Yes. I think I did see a good Bad Flicks video on it.
Yeah, they did go into that one. And the
which is a great series, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Jesse, have you seen that? The Good Bad Flicks? I know you like Dead Meat, where it's the kill counter, but this is another series where they just talk about the making of these terrible movies.
I haven't seen it, no.
Okay, that's a good one if you're very curious about it.
Yeah, they really go into detail on this one, and they go into detail on how, like, the actress almost got crushed by the giant maggot alien that they designed to.
Oh, Jesus.
Because it was so big. And apparently James Cameron worked on that.
Yeah, James Stranger. Corman worked with Cameron in his early part of his career. I mean, he directed Piranha 2, right?
Piranha 2 was James Cameron, and Piranha 1 was Joe Dante, which is another great director.
Huh. Very interesting how these big stars just started working with Corman and then went on.
And of course, everyone forgets one of the most important big stars whose career started thanks to Corman, Jack Nicholson.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Little Shop of Horrors. He plays the guy who likes going to the dentist a lot.
Right. He's Bill Murray's character in the musical version. Got it.
Exactly. And he just was in a bunch of Roger Corman films from there on out, along with bisexual icon Vincent Price and Boris Karloff in the Edgar Allan Poe series cycles of films.
That's right. Okay. I did. I've not seen a lot of these films, but I've studied and seen a lot about them.
Oh, yeah. You know? That's fair.
Yeah.
No, yeah. The Poe films are genuinely really good. I will say that about, and again, they were good despite the fact that Cameron filmed them all within a few weeks of each other at the same location and recycled shots from the films in each other.
Recycling shots. It's almost like another legendary indie producer likes to do that in every one of his films.
Oh, I can't imagine what you mean.
Something about an Avenger that's also slightly toxic.
Oh,
maybe
really?
That's one of the related projects.
I might have met this guy once before, actually. This particular,
you know,
individual.
Same here.
He's a character.
We're talking about Lloyd Kaufman, of course.
Lloyd Kaufman's great. The thing about Lloyd Kaufman, though, I can never get mad at Lloyd Kaufman because, like, he's so unabashedly ridiculous. Like,
he's so unabashedly Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah, like, he's doing it because he knows he's going to tick people off, and he just loves it, and I can't be mad at that.
Yeah, he's an interesting character for sure.
Yeah.
I genuinely adore The Toxic Avenger. That's my favorite film amazing. That they've done by far. It's so, like, exploitative, but also, like, has this amazing big heart quality about it where it's, like, there's genuine love there.
Oh, yeah. And it has my celebrity wife, Marissa Tomei, in it.
She's in that?
Yeah, she has, like, a small role. She's, like, in the background of the scene.
I guess I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, she's, like, in an extra in some of the scenes. And if you know she's there, you're like, oh, yeah, it's obviously future Academy Award-winning actress and future Aunt May, Marissa Tomei. But, like, if you don't, yeah, I can totally see you just overlooking her because there's so much nonsense going on in front of you.
I want to talk about some more nonsense, though, before I forget this topic, because we're going all over the place.
Sorry.
But I wanted to go back to Slumber Party Massacre. I would definitely do a multiple-hour podcast, though, on the work of Troma, but that's for another time.
Hold me on for that one. I'll rewatch some Troma.
Slumber Party Massacre, I saw for the first time. So I actually, I will say it's technically a bad movie. It's by the number slasher, and it has those weird sexist moments. But I also really enjoy it.
I love seeing when she just eats pizza. Like the pizza scene.
That was so weird. She ate it on top of the body.
Yeah, it's like, what? It's dance. I forget the exact line, but it's like, it's great. I love it. It's perfection.
So, yeah. So, Jazzy, it's exactly what you think it is. It's a movie with a killer stalking girls at a slumber party, essentially. And there's also, like, an extended sequence where there's a pillow fight sequence, of course, and two guys outside the window watching through, peeping, you know, typical. Like, it has all the tropes. If you want, like, a movie with all the tropes, it has all the tropes. But the drill being...
Fascinating. Well,
I do recommend it.
It's kind of hard to miss what the drill means. And then the sequel's even better.
Yeah, so I'm gonna let you guys continue on talking about horror movies and shit. I'm very tired, so I think I'm gonna hop out of here.
Jazzy, as always, love talking with you every week. You want to plug your stuff before you go?
Yeah, you can find me over on Twitter at Lady Jazzington. You can find me over on Twitch under the same name. Currently, every Saturday, I am in the middle of a Kingdom Hearts marathon in celebration of my 2K followers on Twitter. You can also find me on YouTube under Jazzy Oliver. I just released a cover of Jack's Lament from the Nightmare Before Christmas in celebration of Halloween.
Oh, yeah, I gotta listen to that.
That's go awesome. Listen to that, go share that, and go do all the things. Jazzy, I will definitely see you next week for sure.
All right, see y'all.
Jazzy, it's always a pleasure talking to you. You're always so cool.
You as well, Ann. Sorry I can't stay for the whole thing. I'm just...
No.
It's all good.
It's fine. We're doing this later. We do it, so it's cool.
Yeah, I mean, by me, it's all like 10:30, so I probably won't be out too much later anyway, so you're not missing too much.
All right. See y'all.
All right. Bye.
Bye. No, but some point massacre.
Let's get into the conversation with us because, I'm going to say I actually liked the first film because I knew I was excited to see a movie that was so quintessential slasher, like where I could go, like where I will say the only difference is obviously it's not like a knife or anything or a blade. It's a fucking drill.
I love that though. And it ends on such an abrupt note too, which is kind of wild.
I love the ending actually because like it's perfect. Like I don't think there's something I would change about that ending. Having them all fight him,
it's perfect.
The pool.
It's wonderful. I love it. And then the sequel has a freaking like chain, as the freaking like guitar with the drill, and it's so, just like
I have multiple feelings about too. I think it's hilarious, and I also think it's really boring at times.
If you are. Both are correct perspectives on this.
Like, I think... Like, I adore the visuals, but I wish it didn't take a fucking an hour to get to them.
No, I agree.
It, like,
no reason, especially the beginning, it's just almost all flashback.
Okay. There's something I want to bring up because you're here, and you mentioned Dune.
Mm-hmm.
Dune and Slumber Party Massacre Part 2 are connected in the way that both films feature a character who, for the first half of the fucking movie, almost the entirety of the movie, has premonitions, constant premonitions about what's going to happen. Think about it like that.
You're not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong. That's the worst part.
So I basically, wish you could say, Dune and Slumber Party Massacre 2 are exactly the same.
Crystal, I wish I could say, girl, what the fuck? Why would you think that? That's a bizarre opinion. Why would you ever suggest that? But the problem is I can't say that. I can't say that and mean it.
Because I'm not wrong.
You're not wrong. And it is, and even if you want to go even further, there is an agenda, a secret agenda, that doesn't really kick into gear until the second half of the story, where especially if you're going by the new Dune film, because you know it's the first half of the book, but the secret agenda that until halfway through doesn't really factor into the narrative, really.
No,
at least not the direct action. I mean, it factors in, but it's not like a direct contributor to the narrative. It doesn't have the external conflict coming in as much.
It's the sister of the main character from the first film coming back, and she's played by a different actress. And she is going to this empty house for another slumber party. But meanwhile, exactly like Dune, having those fucking flash forward premonitions where you don't know what reality is and what's going to happen in the future.
I just love it. It's just so stupid. It's beautiful though.
I love it for that. I love it for the fucking bonkers visuals it comes up with, where it's like giant zit exploding.
It's grotesque. I feel like the first Slumber Party Massacre has more to do with
tame.
It's more like a Halloween Friday 13th, whereas the second one's more Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah, I agree with that take.
I like Nightmare on Elm Street, which is probably why I like the second one a little more. Like that aesthetic, that style, okay. I'm fond of.
I think I actually prefer the first one as a film, but I admire the bonkers nature of the second one, just for being like, yeah, we're gonna make it so that you don't know whether or not the killer is tangible in the real world and whether or not the events are actually happening as they're unfolding. Oh yeah, and we're also gonna give him musical numbers and look like he comes straight out of the 50s and give him a guitar that has a fucking power drill at the top of it.
Cause why not? It's just for funsies. It's for funsies.
That's my favorite part about it. His aesthetic. The killer's aesthetic.
It's great. It's like, no, the killer is a rockabilly, like, guitar-wielding drill guy.
The Driller Killer.
Honestly, have you ever seen Driller Killer?
I've not seen Driller Killer.
It's surprisingly psychological. Like, okay. I would compare it more to Maniac. Okay. You've seen Maniac, right?
I've not, actually.
Ooh, okay. So I'm referencing a lot of sleazy early 80s, late 70s films. They have the same aesthetic where it's like more about why this killer is a sad, pathetic human being.
Okay.
Who also kills people. There's something really unsettling about those films.
Yeah.
I find anyway.
No, I'm with you. Those films are very unsettling.
Yeah. Like I like them. They're really good horror films. I think Maniac more so than Driller Killer. Because Driller Killer feels a little too like slow-paced at times.
Mm.
I guess I wouldn't want to compare it to Henry because it can be Portrait of a Serial Killer. Because that film feels very quick and fast-paced, whereas these feel very unorthodox in their pacing.
Okay.
In a way that I think services Henry well, but not necessarily Maniac or Driller Killer. Like, I can see someone seeing Driller Killer and saying, yeah, man, that was just boring. I was waiting for the kills to come up. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. But if you said Maniac was too fast, I don't get why we had all those kills at the movie. Where was the characterization? I'm like, yeah, I can see that too. Like, because Maniac is just... And I mean, like, the 80s version of Maniac, not the Elijah Wood version, which is... It's a whole other can of worms.
Like any other remake, right? Yeah. It's a whole can of worms.
Well, they tried making it a found footage film.
Oh, that's kind of an interesting concept.
But it's kind of only a found footage film because it's from the killer's POV.
Okay.
And the killer's Elijah Wood.
Okay. Interesting choice.
It's this surreal, and he also produced the film.
Okay, I like Elijah.
Oh yeah, and now even more bizarrely, the original film was also kind of produced by its main actor.
That is a fun connection.
Yeah. Both films were kind of these, like, passion projects by the main actors involved.
Okay, that's cool.
Except in Maniac, the actor is Joe Spinell, who, to tie everything full circle, was in The Godfather.
Wow, we have to do we can't not tie everything together. That's the show.
I tie it all together. He's also in Rocky. He was in a few of the movies as like bit characters, but like he really played this like psychopath in Maniac. Really, like, it's one of the most profoundly unsettling horror villains I've ever seen.
Okay. Because, you're making me want to see this.
Yeah, Maniac I really recommend, but know what it is. It's a film that was banned in several countries because of how messed up it is. Okay. It is genuinely a grim, unsettling, depressing film. There's no joy. You will feel no happiness watching this film. But it is also worth watching. Like, it's not a film you can make jokes about. It's just a film you experience and just feel uncomfortable watching the whole time. It also has one of the greatest head explosions in any film ever.
Yes!
and yes, it is Tom Savini who gets his head blown up.
Oh, well, that's fucking perfect.
He did the effects in this movie. And it's
you won me over by saying Tom Savini.
Yeah. And, you know, as an extra bias, his head blows up in New Jersey.
Okay.
Which for me is just a whole, as a New Jerseyan, it's a plus. I know exactly where, I know the general area where they're supposed to be. And I'm just like, yeah, that's a New Jersey thing to do. They would do that.
I mean, I guess if we're going to tie it into like location based things, I know a lot of the areas that take place with Summer Party Massacre.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it. Love it. Actually, it's kind of funny. I just published an article. Well, I didn't publish it. I wrote an article for Dread Central just recently about New Jersey horror and how New Jersey is kind of like this capital of terror, but like no one ever talks about it. Like Halloween takes place in Haddonfield, Illinois, right?
Yes.
But the town is based on the hometown that producer Deborah Hill lived in, Haddonfield, New Jersey.
Okay. And also connecting back to film being filmed in Pasadena, California.
Exactly. There you go. So none of it has so little to do with Illinois. It's hilarious. The Friday the 13th films filmed in a camp from New Jersey. In fact, one of my friends at my wedding has camped there before multiple times as a Boy Scout and an Eagle Scout. You have what's another one? You have very famously the vastly underrated horror film Alice, Sweet Alice.
Which I do know that film, but I've not seen it. It's
filmed and takes place in Paterson, New Jersey.
Wow, people really want to murder people in New Jersey then, right?
Well, Paterson has a bit of a high crime rate, especially in the past. Well, not so much now. For a time, it was a very, very well known for its high crime rate, but and for gentrification. It's a victim of gentrification for a lot of the cases. And even when Alice Sweet Alice was being filmed, it was known as an Italian ghetto as opposed to now, more darker skinned African Americans, Hispanic. Again, this is all a matter of systemic problems and systemic kind of there's a whole lot the economics of Paterson is a whole and how it affects the population and affects the poverty levels and affects crime. It's a whole system of complex elements that I'm not fully equipped to explain, so I won't, but rest assured it's a lot of systemic problems and circumstance that's designed by those who wish to profit off of it. Anyway, so horror films.
It all connects. And I wonder, since we are talking horror films, as we do, I think, there's a certain holiday that's coming up this Sunday. A certain Halloween-y holiday, right?
Halloween-y holiday. I can't imagine what that might be.
I don't know.
Everyone's favorite Halloween-y holiday,
Thanksgiving.
Arbor Day.
Yes, it's Halloween, which I actually plan to release this episode on Halloween Day as our final sort of spooky month Halloween episode. And with that in mind, I actually wanted to bring up something because I think to start the process of wrapping up this episode, I wanted to ask about things that you like. I asked this at the beginning of the month, and I'm going to ask you, is there something, like, movie, novel, whatever, that you tie directly to, like, Halloween, or at least maybe something that gives you that nice vibes, or that you maybe even have, like, a film that you watch every year, or a tradition, or something related to that, that you just love, that you adore?
Well, aside from Halloween, because I feel like I've talked about that this entire podcast,
yes,
it's definitely one of those films, but... there's a few other ones. I think, of course, Trick or Treat, which I think is an increasingly popular answer nowadays, is a great Halloween film. It really gets the aesthetic of Halloween down. Another example, I would say, Night Before Christmas. Obviously, those are classics. I think lesser known for Halloween would be the WNUF Halloween special.
I actually do plan to see that. It's cool.
Worth watching. Very worth watching. To those who don't know, the WNUF Halloween special is a quote-unquote analog horror film. It's much like Channel 58 or whatever, or Local 58, it's on YouTube. It's meant to simulate what older localized TV would look like. And it's like this really VHS-recorded, ruddy-looking special that just a local news station goes to a local haunted house, and it's, you know, meant to show this creepy stuff, and stuff goes wrong. It's very similar also to the BBC movie Ghost Watch,
which I have heard about, which actually sounds kind of terrifying.
It's also excellent. Ghost Watch is probably the better film. I would say Ghost Watch is an incredible film, but the WNUF special I love because it just gets that like local weird, you know, channel vibe that I just adore from like my childhood and older films. It's a nice feeling.
It's weaponizing nostalgia against you to play on your fears, right?
I mean, in theory, but it's not particularly scary. It's when you realize
the concept, I mean, yeah.
What's interesting is when you realize what's actually happening, it's actually really clever. Like, you'll see what I mean when you see it, but it's okay. Actually a very clever film, the WNUF special. But it's Ghostwatch is just a great movie.
Okay, I will definitely watch that then. I'll watch both. I will use both as a double feature.
Yeah, they're both worth watching. I think they're both.
They really have different tone though, right?
Very different. Ghostwatch is stiff upper lip British BBC record television, and WNUF special is more kind of gaudy, cheesy, local TV aesthetic, which is so different than the BBC, but so I think tonally WNUF has a better tone than Ghostwatch,
okay,
which is more, again, stiff, a little more proper, a little more formal.
I think I've seen clips of it, so yeah, I get exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, but both are worth watching, I think.
Okay. Well, those are great recommendations for anyone looking for something to do on Halloween as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have plans to go out or whatnot. Because I plan to most likely just going to stay home and watch horror movies all day. Just enjoy that. Enjoy the spooky vibes. Not do too much crazy.
Oh, no. I love it.
I just, you know what I've been loving to do on Halloween? My favorite type of horror film is something that, like, will make you laugh, make you feel good, you know? And I know it's weird to say in this genre that it's something can be feel good, but, I mean, I spent last Halloween watching Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, so...
Yes.
Because I was like, this is a it's a holiday about scares for sure, but I also like to have fun with my scares, and that movie's just a blast. You know, I tend to choose a film that has comedy when it comes to my Halloween day selection, or at least the last film I watch, because it's like, you know, it's nice to end on a good mood, you know.
I agree. This is why you should watch the most uplifting and charming Halloween film for Halloween. You should always listen. I'm just saying, you should always end on an uplifting note, which is why I recommend you watch The Mist.
Oh.
The most happy horror film.
I just love its happy ending.
Oh, so uplifting. Really, really lights up the room with all the joy.
That is one of those movies that pissed me off when I finished it.
By design, of course. It's meant to piss you off.
I guess so. It just made me hate the movie.
it's so... Like, what if you just waited 15 seconds?
I was mad because people have argued against me at this. I still stand by it, where I think the ending is totally, like, I get the perspective of people who like it, but I also just find it fucking cheap.
That's why it's great. It's cheap, but it also feels real. Like,
I don't think it's real. I don't...
It feels real-ish.
I don't think it's real. I think it's
good. I didn't say it felt logical. I said it felt real.
Okay.
There's the difference. What is real and what is logical are not always the same thing.
I guess
that's my logic. It feels it real because me. Oh no, it's by design. It's meant to annoy you. It's meant to piss you off because it hurts. Because you know how many times.
Fans listening to this know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, you know how many times people are overly rash and come to a decision without thinking it through. Or had I but known that this was going to happen, I wouldn't have done that. And that's why it feels real, because everyone's done that at least once. Except not like to the extent as in the ending of The Mist. Like,
yeah.
Like, had I but known that my friend was getting me pizza, I wouldn't have eaten McDonald's beforehand.
Oh, no.
Except this is more, you know, a little less flash in the pan and more of a, like a slow burn roasting, one might say, of terrible decision making.
Roasting is also what I do to chuds on the internet.
All the time. You do it very well. I might want to add Chris.
Thank you. I think the scariest thing that you know, we have to deal with online on Twitter is TERFs.
Yeah, they're up there, I think. Especially
chuds and TERFs.
Chuds and TERFs suck, man. Crystal, they fucking suck. My fucking damn. Wow. Okay. I'm getting to that point where I'm just swearing my head off now.
Oh, it's okay. This is what the show is.
Yeah.
But they are fun to poke at. When you get someone who definitely can't handle their own, making fun of them is a blast.
Well, it's surprising how thin-skinned a lot of them are, you know? Like,
I mean, their whole perspective is based off of emotional irrationality. So,
yeah. Like, they'll throw transphobic jokes your way, and you just say, hey, but your mom. And they'll be like, how dare you insult my mother?
I had a British TERF come at me just today, not long. I mean, I was jumping in the conversation, as I do, to defend people I care about.
Of course. But
they're a suck count. Like, you saw my tweet that I did earlier about it. Skin. It was kind of a relation. I'm not saying that the reaction was necessarily thin-skinned, but I do appreciate my joke I made, is that they were getting upset about Americans and our language, which they were trying to connect back to pronouns, all that stuff. They said, you can't even find Africa or India on a map. And I responded back, well, because they're British, you can't even find a dentist.
I was going to tell them you couldn't find it on the British map because it's no longer a British colony, you know, or something like that. Try to bring up the whole British colonialism thing. Like, oh, yeah, well, we didn't freaking try to take over the world and losing
it.
No,
I hit the low bar.
You got to add the low bar is good. I would have thought too hard about it. I would have gone for some history reference about the terrible
history. I was pretty
history.
Proud of that one.
That's a good one, though. I have to give you that. Just you know, you should have also done, you should have included a GIF from Austin Powers where they show, like, him looking at his teeth. Simply that, you're good to go.
Sometimes a good GIF is great.
That's what we need. A picture says 1,000 words, and Twitter does not allow 1,000 words on your tweets, so it saves you some time.
Oh, man. We almost went an entire episode without mentioning Twitter. We had to not. That has to be a thing.
At least we didn't mention Meta.
Oh, no. Are we going to get into that conversation, too?
But Crystal, it's Meta. Can't you see
wait, is it Meta?
Mark Zuckerberg like trying to pretend he's one of those one of them people who uses his service?
Wait, one of those people? You're acting he's a human?
I'm not sure. Mark Zuckerberg, I think, has long ago replaced his body with augmentations. He may just be a robot.
It probably is.
I can't prove this, but I can't say he isn't.
For legal reasons, we cannot confirm this.
Yes, unfortunately, the last time I tried to collect blood from a major celebrity, I was asked politely to leave the Applebee's.
What was the celebrity doing at Applebee's?
Well,
researching a role.
I dragged him there.
You dragged him there. Okay.
Yeah. I figured it would be a good private place. No one goes to Applebee's.
Oh, that's
true. I was
true.
Mistaken. There were at least 7 people over the age of 80 there. It's a very dark time, but we shall not mention the dark times today.
And we're going to mention the times that we're in now, where we're sitting in our home. The only light is a jack-o'-lantern as we enjoy our spooky movies.
Oh, and I don't have any jack-o'-lanterns here, unfortunately. I wish I did.
You can get, if you have Shudder, you can just pull up the screen where it's the jack-o'-lantern on like a loop for hours and hours.
The gulag.
You can pull that up and enjoy the warm glow of that.
I've been wanting to see that new documentary series they have on Shudder about like horror icons.
Oh shit, I want to see that.
Yeah, I might watch that. I might grab another of these whiskey cocktail things after this and just watch that on like Shudder after this.
You're making me want to do that, because right now they also released, if we're not having the full Netflix conversation right now, but if you still have a Netflix account, they are doing the Movies That Made Us, a brand new season where it's all horror themed. So they had Halloween, they're doing Alien, they're doing Friday the 13th, and also RoboCop for some reason. I wouldn't call it.
I think also Nightmare on Elm Street is being done.
Yeah, well. I think so. If you want like some documentary series, hey, you got that to go with, or you can go with Shudder, which has about each of the icons of horror, which is they're doing Candyman, Pinhead, Jason, Freddy, right?
Yeah, I think it's like one episode a week. They're definitely doing Michael Myers. I think the first one, and they have interviews with like a lot of different figures in pop culture. I will say this also: if you're getting Shudder and you want to watch documentaries, you have to watch Horror Noir.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the best horror documentaries ever. And you also have to watch the Island of Dr. Moreau documentary.
I did see that one, actually.
It's just so freaking insane.
It is insane. Also, Cursed, I think, is another.
It's very cursed. Oh.
No, I mean the show Cursed as
films.
Well.
Oh, Cursed films,
yeah.
That was, I was just talking about that recently, too, thanks to the whole, The Crow. Their cover on that is just incredible, as well as their cover on Twilight Zone the movie.
Yeah, that's definitely one that stuck with me. The Twilight Zone the movie.
It's heartbreaking what happened. It's like even decades later, it's still one of those things where you go back to it and you're like, how the fuck did they let this happen? Like that's a series of mess ups, like a real catastrophic level of just.
Yeah.
Fuck up after the next.
That was the episode that paired that with Lloyd Kaufman tying back.
And Lloyd Kaufman,
which I gave, I got more respect for him, not just because he was wearing a dress, but also because his role was no harm to humans on set, which I think is fucking awesome.
Yeah, because he's making movies. Like he's a consummate professional. Like say what you will about the guy and how weird he is and how weird his movies are. He doesn't want to kill his actors.
I think he cares about the people he works with.
People who work with Lloyd Kaufman, they seem fiercely loyal of the guy.
Mm-hmm. They love
so that. Yeah, they love like every James Gunn film has Lloyd Kaufman show up.
Yeah, he was in Suicide Squad.
He's in Suicide Squad, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, he's in all those films because clearly James Gunn likes him.
Yes, very much so. They are an interesting match for sure. And I think with this fun note and our recommendations for both documentary and some fun horror movies to watch, I think this is a perfect time to wrap up this episode, this Halloween special of
certainly
the Gals of Geekdom podcast.
But that's just one gal, one guy, so I guess it's like you gotta rename it now. As the chairman of the board here, I hereby decree.
Was it the singular gal of geekdom and the guy who was drinking while talking?
Yes, I have been drinking the ice of this melting cocktail this entire time.
Would you like to plug your stuff? where people can find you and all that good stuff.
You can find me on the twitter.coms at AGRAMUGLIA, Agrimulia. You can find me on CBR, Anime Feminist, Anime Herald, recently on Dread Central, The Mary Sue, Screen Rant, a few other places as well. Where I primarily write articles on pop culture, films, anime, comics, books, what have you. Video games on occasion. I have a bit of an eclectic body of bylines on there. So there you go.
You've written a lot, and definitely go read his work. We will definitely have you on again.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
No, for sure. And I'll plug my stuff before we go. My name is Crystal Williams. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal W Rocks. That's CHR. It's spelled that way on purpose. I know it's different. Don't bully me. I'm already bullied enough. I'm also a writer, and you can read my writing on my Medium, where I just published an article not for coming out day, where I talked about my out experience here. So if you want to read that, you can go do that. And I'm occasionally on the Violet Wanderers podcast, and I'm on your podcast from time to time. So you can find those on the internet by looking up Crystal Williams. But thank you so much for being on again our show.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you, listeners, for enjoying our long Halloween episode, which is I hope you really enjoyed this one. And as always, we will see you next time. Goodbye, everybody.